AM 1240, 95.3 FM. Good morning. I'm Lee Voss in for Jay Caldwell this final day. Joining me now, Star Tribune sports columnist Jim Suhan. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Lee.
And Jim's appearance, as always, being brought to you by the Green Mill in downtown St. Cloud. Well, Jim, the Twins trade away their closer, Johan Duran. I want your thoughts on, A, the trade, but also what they got in return.
So the two big picture things. Number one, the fact that they were willing, you know, you trade Paddock, he's a guy you didn't want anyway. You know, you're just getting an A-ball prospect. You were trading Dobnik just as organizational depth. I mean, those moves were waving the white flag on this season, but they really weren't long-term damaging moves. Duran, you're going to trade Duran, a great young closer who's under control for a couple more years. That is a symbol that you are tearing down and you're willing to trade almost anybody on the roster. This is, you know, so the Paddock trade was, okay, we're giving up on this season. The Duran trade is, we don't even think this group can win next year. I think that what they just signaled is that they don't think that this group is going to win and they need to tear down and start over. So that's a little scary for Twins fans. They did get value. They got this is the first, last year, no top 100 prospects were traded. They got two top 100 prospects in this deal yesterday. Tate, you know, very young catching prospect. He was Philly's number three prospect, according to Baseball America. Nick Abel, young right-handed pitcher, talent, dominated AAA, didn't do so well in the big leagues in his first chance up here in June. He was ranked as the sixth best prospect. He was a top 100 prospect before he got to the major leagues. So they got two top 100 prospects, young pitching, which is always incredibly valuable, catching, which is really hard to find. Both of their deals, they've gotten young catchers, so they obviously saw a weakness within the organization. So in terms of overall value long-term, they probably did pretty well here. But the headline is you trade Duran, it means you don't trade an all-star caliber, young, under-control closer if you think you have a chance of winning next year. So this feels like a teardown now.
Who else is next? We have the trade deadline coming up at 6 o'clock tonight.
I think Griffin Jacks, I think they'll trade him if they can. I think Harrison Bader is a very logical guy to trade. I can see the Yankees being interested in him. The other one, Bobby Nightingale from my paper, is an excellent reporter. He's reported that Carlos Correa, the Astros are interested in Correa. I think the Twins would love to get out from under that contract if they could. I don't know if that deal is going to get done. Bobby reported that talks kind of stalled on Wednesday. We'll see what happens today. But obviously, you trade Correa. That would be, I mean, I think trading Correa, whether you're tearing down or whatever, is probably a good idea. He just had, he had a bad year. He's only getting older. They took a shot with him. It didn't work. And if they can get rid of most of that contract, they would be very happy, I think. Then you have Colom is a very logical guy to trade, left-handed reliever on a one-year deal. Everybody wants another lefty. Let's see who else. Willie Castro is an interesting guy because if you're tearing down, you'll trade Willie Castro. But they've had so many, you know, positional infield position prospects not pan out or struggle. You know, Willie's kind of your insurance against those guys not performing. So if I would like to see him keep him around, but if you're willing to trade Duran, you're willing to trade Castro, you know, and he's another guy who will be very valuable for team independent race. Guy can play different positions, can pinch run, can pinch hit, can hit. And let's see, honestly, like I said, I mean, there are the logical people to trade, but if you're willing to trade Duran, you're willing to trade anybody. Buxton's not going anywhere. No trade clause, injured, doesn't want to go anywhere. Pablo's hurt. So you're not trading him. Other than that, I think they'd probably trade just about anybody.
Doesn't Correa have a no trade clause, and would he waive that if they struck a deal with the Astros?
He does have a no trade clause. I don't think he would go anywhere, but he lives in Houston in the offseason. He trains in Houston in the offseason. He's close with people in that organization. He won championships there. It's the one city that doesn't hold anything against him from the cheating scandal. I think if the Astros wanted him, I don't see him blocking a trade to the Astros. I could see him blocking a trade to a lot of places. I don't think he'd block a trade to the Astros.
Well, and, you know, the trade deadline certainly appears to be having an effect on the team on the field because yesterday was a stinker.
That was embarrassing. That was, and, you know, the interesting thing here is that these guys all summer, you know, Falvey, Zoll, Baldelli, the entire organization, they've basically been on a job interview all season, ever since it became, you know, official the team is going to be sold. And yesterday was the worst day of their job interview. That was an embarrassment. And listen, bad games happen in baseball. They don't always mean something. But that felt like, you know, the team has given up. And it just felt like, you know, it felt hopeless. And, you know, and that's, you know, it feels hopeless. The season's over. Team's getting sold. They're trading away all-star caliber players. Boy, it feels like they're clearing the decks. And I don't know. I just don't know how, even if you think highly of the people in charge, and I have always felt, you know, kind of felt that way, that they're good, intelligent, responsible people. I just don't know what case they make. I don't know how they say, hey, we're about, you know, 8-9 years into this tenure and we're absolutely tearing everything down, selling off and starting over. I don't know how a new owner comes in and is impressed with that.
The Lynx get a nice win last night. And is Nafisia Collier the MVP front runner?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's really not close. I mean, she's the best player in the league. She's on the best team. And she probably has less all-star caliber help around her than any other MVP candidate. I mean, it's really a runaway at this point. And last night, people want to make this about revenge or, you know, winning a regular season game when the other team's best player isn't on the court doesn't make up for losing game five of the championship game of last year's series. Okay. It's not that it doesn't work that way as much as it feels good for people to say that. It was just a regular season win, but Collier was brilliant again. She is strengthening her case for the MVP on a nightly basis. And, you know, New York made a nice run there. They had an 11-0 run to make it a game late in the fourth. And Collier just hits this ridiculous driving left-handed scoop shot. I don't know how players make that shot, and she made it under pressure. She was great. And you know who else was really good? Natisha Heidemann. Gave him a big burst in the third quarter. They were not getting a whole lot of bench production. She came in and she really kind of turned the game in their favor. And Courtney Williams was good. You know, McBride was good. But yeah, Collier is just, she's become the best player in the world.
Jim, two-part question for you here. What are the Lynx weaknesses as we look toward the playoffs, and what are their strengths?
I mean, they have a million strengths. They pass the ball better than any team in the WNBA. They pass the ball more often than any other team in the NBA. They have a higher assist rate than anybody else. They play great team defense. Alana Smith, you know, and Collier are excellent defenders, both defensive player of the year kind of type players. They play beautifully together. They're good in transition. They're incredibly well coached. And they can shoot it. They have a team full of people who can shoot the three. Weaknesses, relative weaknesses, because they are the best team in the league. Defensive rebounding is not a particular strength, and it isn't because they don't have a lot of bulk inside. You know, they have Collier and Smith are both, they both have good size. They're both basically kind of power forwards who sometimes have to play inside because they just don't have a lot of other size. So we've seen occasionally other teams muscle them and just beat them up inside. You know, Jonquel Jones was the WNBA Finals MVP last year, but she was able to beat them up inside. So, you know, there are ways of counteracting that, but that is a relative weakness, defensive rebounding and just sheer size.
How's their depth?
They wish it were better at this point. You know, Diamond Miller has not developed into a, she has good moments, she has good games, but she has not developed into a reliable player. Heidemann is a very good player, and she's a really nice, you know, energy, jitterbug, go get you a bucket, break down the opposing defense. You know, she's a really nice player off the bench. Jess Shepherd is a really nice player off the bench, rebounding, passing, some inside scoring. But the their depth is not fantastic. And, you know, Yorka Juhas didn't come back. She was their biggest player last year. Again, not a great player, but somebody who kind of come in and rebound for you. And the fact that Diamond Miller has not developed into a reliable player does hurt them in that regard.
All right, switching gears, we've got NFL training camps open. Taking a look at the NFC North, the Lions had a lot of turnover in their coaching staff. The Bears went out, bolstered their offensive line to try and protect Caleb Williams. The Packers kind of held steady, if you will. What do you think of the other teams in the North?
Fascinating division. Absolutely fascinating division. Lions have dominated the division for 2 years, but now they lose their brains. They lose Ben Johnson. They lose Aaron Glenn. They're both coordinators. They lose Frank Ragnow, who held that offensive line together. An offensive line was a major strength for that team. Now they're going to get, you know, they hope to get Aiden Hutchinson back for a full season. He was hurt a lot last year, and that could make a difference. But I just don't know how they – it felt like last year was their year, and to go forward with – New coordinators, a new center. There's still a lot of talent. Skill positions, they are still loaded. And Hutchinson is still an excellent player. But I really think the defense is suspect. And I don't know if the offensive line is going to be the strength it was. And I just don't know that they're going to be able to outthink people the way they did last year. So still good, still dangerous. But I feel like last year was their peak.
And, you know, the Packers, a lot of people are high on the Packers, but I still don't know if I trust Jordan Love.
Well, that's the interesting thing. They won 11 games last year. Okay. They're always good. And they had, and one of their problems, you know, Jordan Love being reliable was one of their problems. Very productive player, very talented player, but he's a guy who's a little hard to trust. That's what's going to be interesting with them, the fact they spent a first round. I finally spent a first round draft pick on a wide receiver last year. A lot of good receivers, no great receiver, no necessarily every game reliable receiver. Now they have to add Matthew Golden, a really talented guy who can get deep, and he could change things. You know, because Jordan Love, you know, we all have our doubts about him, but he also had a group of receivers who dropped a lot of passes. So does Matthew Golden come in and change that dynamic? Does he make the game easier for Jordan Love? I mean, otherwise, they're a very good team, a very good franchise. They're going to be good. We just don't know how good.
And before we let you go, the Bears, obviously, Ben Johnson, the new head coach. He was brilliant as an OC in Detroit, but being a head coach is a different animal.
It's different, and he's going to be an upgrade from Eberflus, who just didn't know what he was doing. He's going to be an upgrade. They have lots of offensive talent around Caleb Williams. They are attempting to upgrade the offensive line with some veterans. So the three big questions: can Johnson have an immediate impact as the head coach? Is he a head coach or is he just a good coordinator? Number two, can the defense stand up to the kind of competition it's going to face in the NFC North against three very good offenses? And number three, is Caleb Williams the guy? You know, I've always had my doubts about him. I thought Jaden Daniels was the best player in that best quarterback in that draft last year. I thought Caleb Williams should have been farther down in the first round, and I'm not sure I would have wanted to take him. There is talent there, of course. Can he play in rhythm? Can he get to a point where he gets rid of the ball quickly? Can he use the talent around him effectively? I mean, that's one of the biggest questions in the entire division.
Jim, it's been an enjoyable week or so talking with you. Jay will be back with you tomorrow. What do you have on your podcast?
Let's see. We have the Viking Update show is out. We have the John Krasinski show is out. We have Randy Shaver's High School Football show. We have Don Mitchell's interview show. Mark Rosen Sports Monday. Russo and LaPanta had worst seats in the house on the hockey team. And everything's at TalkNorth.com or your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Lee, thanks very much.
All right. Jim Suhan, Star Tribune sports columnist, brought to you by the Green Mill of downtown St. Cloud. ABC News coming up, brought to you by Executive Express.